have no conflicts to report. I'm going to be talking about a peer support intervention for diabetes self-care in Ugandan adults. And I'd like to acknowledge my Ugandan colleagues, both physicians and nurses, and funding from the American Academy of Family Physicians through the Eli Lilly Foundation that sponsored a program called Peers for Progress in Diabetes. And its mission was to evaluate and demonstrate and promote peer support for diabetes management worldwide. And they funded 14 grants in 7 continents, both in developed and developing countries. Diabetes is a global epidemic with anticipated growth in cases, mainly in low and middle income countries. Because it requires self-management and chronic care, it's a challenge because of the severe shortage of health workers in many of these areas. And we do know that good self-care does prevent complications of diabetes. The outcomes for this intervention were to address social support and emotional well-being, diabetes self-care behaviors, improve metabolic control, and to enhance linkages with healthcare providers. In the program we did in Uganda, we called it a peer champion program. The peers were people with diabetes, and they received diabetes self-care education. The champions received similar education, but they were also given training in providing supportive communication. We also wanted the champions to be able to read and speak English, and English is the official language of Uganda, where there are at least 52 languages spoken. Champions and peers were then matched to interact at least weekly by phone or in person over a 6-month period. We did our study in a district hospital, Mitiana, which is a rural community about 50 miles west of Kampala, the major city in the country. The measures that we used the American Association of Diabetes Educators 7 behaviors relevant to diabetes self-care, and in addition, we measured perceptions of social support. We also obtained some anthropometric measures. We had all the participants enrolled in a prepaid telephone network so that they could call each other at no cost. We had clinicians keep notes of contacts as well as patients keeping notes of logs, and we had a post-evaluation meeting. At time one, we trained the champions in diabetes self-care. 2 weeks later, we trained peers. We had the champions come to that meeting and match them, obtained the pre-measures, and we distributed the telephones. At time two, 6 months later, we obtained post-measures and had a meeting where we had an open discussion with participants about how the program worked. The purpose of peer contacts were to help people problem solve, to provide this emotional and social support and self-care, and to encourage people to contact the clinic if they had issues about medical management. The communication skills training was pretty straightforward about asking open-ended questions, being a good listener, being optimistic, encouraging goal setting, and supporting healthy behaviors. Our goal was to recruit 30 champions and 30 peers that were diagnosed. We were able to recruit most of the peers. The champions, unfortunately, that day there was a road rally in the country and they blocked all the roads to get to Mitiana, so we couldn't get as many people to come. At time two, you can see the numbers here, we had a very high retention rate. The participants, this slide shows some of their demographic profile. The difference in education levels was really based on our inclusion criteria, that we wanted champions to be able to read and speak English to read the materials that we prepared. When we looked at resources, we were very lucky to, we made a point of tying our study on to an ongoing study in Uganda that was training teams to provide diabetes clinics at district hospitals because of the increased number of people with diabetes that could not be managed at referral centers where sometimes they would get 400 people a day for a clinic. Very few people monitored their blood sugar. Most of the people reported having difficulty accessing medications. Sometimes it just wasn't there. They ran out of insulin on the fifth day of the month, or they couldn't afford the meds. That the physical space was inadequate. This was where people waited for the diabetes clinic out in the sun or the rain, and this was the clinic. So the results, we were able to engage people because of the different numbers. We had people in pairs or in triads, matching by age and gender. We were very concerned about gender, being told, you know, in Uganda, a married woman doesn't talk to a man alone, and we have to be very respectful of that. We were thrilled to find out that 100% of people made a peer contact, and most of those were weekly. Many of the patients contacted the clinic, and they reported they did this more often, again, because of the telephone, and they didn't have to pay for that call. And some of the people did meet each other in person over that six-month period. The measures that we took, we found no significant differences pre and post in coping with diabetes, perceptions of barriers, confidence in management, or helpfulness of social support from their friends and family. In self-care behaviors, we did find a significant increase in people reporting eating healthier. And a lot of that difference was they were eating more fruits and vegetables. In terms of our risk measures, we found a significant drop in diastolic blood pressure, as well as average A1C. And if you look at these A1C levels and you know the optimal goal is 7% or lower, they were still way out of control, but a little bit better. Linkages to care. When we talked to patients, they felt that they had better care. And some of it was they were better informed. They knew some of the details of diabetes. And they loved access to the telephone. One man said he felt bad, called the nurse. She gave him advice. She called him back the next day. And he said, I was cured right from my hut. And this, you have to appreciate. Otherwise, his option would have been a four-hour journey to the clinic, feeling ill, waiting a few hours, and then having to travel home. And in our electronic records, we could document that 71% of the participants called the clinic, and no difference really between the champions and peers. Asking people what was most helpful, they felt they were very encouraged to contact the clinic, and they received helpful advice. They also received encouragement from their peers. They felt that they learned a lot about diabetes and that they could talk to someone. The difficulties, people felt some people wanted to talk more. They had difficulty contacting their partner. Some people felt their partners weren't motivated enough to make changes. And when we said, don't tell people what to do, about 30% said people were telling me what to do. So people felt much more support from the healthcare team. As I said, improved care and improved both risk measures as well as eating behaviors and knowledge about diabetes. We did not anticipate lower ratings of confidence in managing diabetes or no change in coping. The confidence, we think that we may have eroded confidence because we made them aware of the multiple facets of self-care. And with the reduced perception of social support from family and friends, that may have been reflected by the fact that they were getting more support from their peers. We found that this champion peer model wasn't really valid, that both parties wanted to both receive and provide support. And that the phone network technology was a very effective way to improve healthcare delivery and chronic care. We also, at the end, were told that we wanted to be sensitive to cultural issues and match people by gender, and most of our participants said, why didn't you just match us by where we lived, close to each other, that may not have been as important as you thought. Level of poverty required that we had to provide a lot of support for people to even come to the clinic. When we look at things like language is the preferred written language is English, but if you speak Luganda or Acholi, nobody ever reads things in that. So after translating all our documents into Luganda, they said nobody reads Luganda, they just speak it. And then in terms of literacy, we found that most people couldn't read because they didn't have corrective lenses. So it was multiple faceted. And medication access was an issue. We really want to emphasize sustainability, not just coming into a village and, you know, being there 6 months and getting out. So about a year and a half later, we did a site visit, and it was interesting how elements of the intervention were sustained, that the clinic nurse decided to integrate diabetes education sessions before every clinic visit, using the diabetes materials that we developed, that routine follow-up was less frequent because they couldn't handle the increased number of cases, but appointments were honored. And this was quite unusual in this hospital and clinics. People were also scheduled to come for appointments on the same day. So while they waited to be seen, they could continue their peer contact. The other message we got loud and clear, because we did go into the community and ask permission to do this study, and we picked this community because there weren't a lot of studies going on. I mean, you can think of Uganda as this sub-Saharan African country. There are tons of people there. I mean, John Hopkins owns the Rakai district, and yep, there are constant studies going on. And they said, please leave something concrete behind. People come and go, and we never hear what happens. So we literally did, I went and bought about 20 bags of concrete, and we were given the end of a hospital ward to renovate, to build a diabetes clinic where there had a consultation room, a lab, and significantly this porch with a covered roof where this is the diabetes club meeting, and this is where the diabetes education sessions occur before every clinic. And this was the group that participated. So, thank you.
Thank you.